We're taking a look at your personal computer and that software on your personal computer today. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in. And certainly, if you want to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Pete, good to have you back.
Always great, Larry.
What are you busy with these days?
Oh, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I would like to say that if you have a computer that's prior to Windows XP, so like Windows 98, mm-hmm. and you're put off upgrading and changing, and you're going about getting ready to do that, make sure you back up your data, because and make sure it's a valid backup. You know, just don't like make one copy and then just assume that it's done, because funny thing happened on the way to the upgrade, you know, to XP and moving on, is the problem of the latest versions of the operating system recognizing Windows 98 software with the new hardware.
Oh.
So it's not a simple take your hard drive out, plug it into another computer.
Okay.
It's looking for drivers for all the new hardware that may not necessarily exist for that operating system, and the drive does not get recognized. So it doesn't become a simple plug and play. And I'm working on one of those problems for a listener. So
yeah.
The drive works, but I'm just saying that there are issues with that. So make sure you do your backups. It's, you know, not just if you have an older computer, but, you know, if you've got a recent one. So,
all right. There's one thing, and every line's full. So let's go to the phones.
Sure.
Ken and Madison, we're on to you. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Thank you very much, fellas. And first of all, I'm an older guy, and so I get terminology wrong sometimes. I don't know a lot about computers. But what I have is this old laptop. It's a ThinkPad, IBM. And it keeps telling me that it's very low on disk space C, mm-hmm. and then I can click here, and then it'll help me clean some things up, and it goes and deletes some things that it doesn't feel like it needs. And then I get this other thing that says I should go and delete old and unnecessary files.
Yep.
So I go to that, and I get this add or remove programs, and it populates with all the stuff that I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Adobe Flash Player. What I do, or, you know, Intel Actual Player, something called MSXML and Microsoft Office XP Professional, which is 333 megabytes, which seems like a lot to a guy like me. But it's all I really do with this computer is email. I do things on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
I search for fun stuff with a Yahoo search.
Sure.
I have a thumb drive with some pictures on it. I put a digital camera in there occasionally to get pictures on my thumb drive.
Sure.
And I listen to things and watch things such as WPR archives, for instance, or Democracy Now! And things like that. But that's about, you know, all I really do. And I have all this stuff, and I have no idea what it is.
Sure.
But I'm afraid to erase it for fear that I'll really, you know, disable the whole thing.
Well, I can tell you, computers, when they get close to being full, they can misbehave. They can start skipping beats and not only acting sluggish, but start displaying problems with running programs that, you know, normally would work fine. So there's a number of things that you can do to free up space. And then after you free up space, that'll give you more room to operate to do some other things.
Okay.
So if you've been listening to show for over the years, one of the things, which operating system are you using on the ThinkPad?
Is that Windows XP?
All right, good. One of the easy things to do is to resize some of the defaults that the operating system has when it's set up. One is to have you resized your recycle bin? Have you ever done something like that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. If you right mouse click on your recycle bin and click on properties, you can resize that to 1% of the default, which is normally 10%. And I should write something like this up, Larry, and put it in my tips.
I've done it
so many times. It's, you know, it's kind of like you forget to do something. This is one of the things I forgot to write up. So I'm going to bore you again, but it's important. So right click on recycle bin, click on properties, and then resize it to 1%. Then go into click on programs, then accessories and system tools, and you'll accessories and then system restore. And go into system restore, and you'll see an area where it talks about the settings. And you want to click on that text, and it'll take you to where you can resize the restore default from 12% down to 1%. And all those things will work fine, and you just are...
Here you got 20% more, right?
You got 20% more space that the operating system was... Let's say your hard drive is 10 gigabytes. Well, that's 1 gigabyte that it was allocating for the operating system, so it's freeing up space. The next thing is whatever web browsers you're using, I would clear the history, clear the cache, and that will free up space. And then if you whatever you're using for email, make sure you delete some old emails, delete your delete box. The contents in your delete box.
Junk mail.
Junk mail. Get rid of those things. After you do that, reboot your system. So now it's going to have some extra space to work with. And if you download a utility program called CCleaner, and if you Google, Yahoo, search it, whatever search engine, Bing, so forth, just type in C and then cleaner, and you'll find it. Download that, and then run that. And you may want to use it to clean up your registry. And there's a feature in there to do that as well. And you may want to save a backup of your registry file once, and then after that, just run it maybe 2 or 3 times until it's completely clean, and then reboot your system after that. And then go to the add remove programs and remove the programs that you don't need, ones that you know that you're not using. Or just go through the list and identify them, and then find them on your system through programs and run them and see whether or not you really need to. Really you're using them or want them. If not, then remove them. And then once you've done that, I would reboot the system again, and you'll probably have a lot more space. Now, the way to tell how much space you actually have on your computer is a number of ways, but the easy way is if you click on Start, right mouse click on My Computer, click on Properties, and you'll see your C drive, and you can... Right mouse click on your C drive and click on properties and see how much free space you have before you do all this, and then how much you have after you've done all that.
Okay. That seems like a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
You know, it takes a little bit of time, but it's all
much.
It's really in steps, you know, recycle bin, then your system restore. And then, you know, go into your web browsers, which you're normally doing, and clear the history and the cache and all that stuff and the temp files, get rid of all that, because that allocates space on your system for other things, or it frees up space and it just makes the computer operate better.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's what those advertisements are all about, you know, to clean up your computer or speed up my PC dot whatever, you know, You know, these are things that you can do for yourself without spending any money and going to other websites to let them try and do it for you.
I see. Okay. Well, that's excellent advice, and I'll give it a shot. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ken, for calling. Let's go to Eric in New Berlin next. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Mr. Green, my computer modem was a victim of the storms last week, a couple weeks ago. And I've got a internal modem with a Windows XP operating system, and it's a 56K modem on an E machine, and I was wondering how to replace that.
Okay. Well, you can, there's a number of options. You could go to, how old's the E machine?
It's an E machine.
But how old?
It is going to be 5 years old.
5 years old. Depends on how patient and how lucky you are. Okay. One is you could go online to like eBay and probably do a search on the modem was probably it's probably occupying a slot, and it's a very small card in the e-machine.
Okay.
Because the modems, as the technology and it just continually improved, those cards got really small. Mm-hmm. But they're still cards. They're not built into the system board. Mm-hmm. So you can actually open up your computer and, you know, with it off and unplugged, and I usually tell people to do this in their socks, and then after you take the cover off, touch the power supply, just dissipate static electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the cards come out where there might be something that clips or snaps in place, and then there's a screw. There's a variety of ways that these things are secured in there. But that card, that modem can come out. You can, you know, if you still have your documentation, you can go and look and see which modem you have in your machine. If you have access to the internet online, you could probably, you know, if obviously not through your system, but through another system, or go to the library and find out what the defaults, what it came with from the factory. And then do a search on eBay and see if you can find, you know, another modem just like it, because I'm sure there are many out there.
Okay.
That would be probably the least expensive way, because usually those things are considered surplus items.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at the age of which it's a collector's item.
It's still surplus.
It's sort of like, you know, looking for a taillight in a junkyard for, you know, an 8-year-old car or something like
mm-hmm.
that. So, you know, that would be one method that I would recommend. So if you're patient and you're able to do that, you might have ones that are buy it now, or you might have like a 99-cent auction with, you know, $5 in shipping. The other option is to go to one of the local retailers and see if they have a replacement that's available. You just have to make sure that the interface that you're using for your card is the same, whether it's a PCI Express modem interface or PCI. You have to look and see what kind of card interface it is. So that's the important thing, and obviously that it's speed rated, you know, to at least 56K. Other than that, you could get an external modem, but you would need a cable, and you could plug it into your serial port.
Okay.
But I would go along the lines of taking the card out, seeing exactly what you got, making, you know, looking through your default, your documentation, and then seeing if you can find it online. If not, you could also do Tiger Direct, CompUSA, and Buy.com. They may have replacements as well.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, with us here today. Jim Packard answering the phones, and our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to our phones and on to Sean in Shell Lake, Wisconsin. Sean, hi.
Hello there.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm kind of concerned about my Medion PC. It's a couple years old, but... every time I start up Firefox, it takes like 2.5 minutes for Firefox to pop up. It's always been like that. And I was wondering if that's a default of my PC, or is that something that Firefox is responsible for?
Have you gone through a recent upgrade to Firefox? Latest, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when problems started happening?
No, they've always been that way, actually.
Uh-huh. Do you clear your history periodically, temporary
yes.
files and things like that?
Yes.
Okay. I would check. You know, how old's the system?
Oh, I bought it in about 03, 04, something like that.
Okay. Let's see. Do you know how much free space you have on the hard drive?
Quite a bit.
Okay. Have you done a system defrag on the hard drive at all to see if that helps?
Yes. Okay. I've actually had a professional come through and actually clean out my system and put in a proper antivirus system mm-hmm. and you know, all that good stuff.
Right.
But it's just always been, I click on Firefox, the shortcut for that.
Right.
And it always takes like two and a half minutes for it mm-hmm. to finally come up. And yeah. That's just what I'm wondering about.
Right. You know what I would try and do is a lighter browser is Google's Chrome. And
okay.
I would, go ahead.
He was asking what it was. Google's
it's
Chrome?
It's made by Google, and it's called Chrome. So you could go to google.com and look for it, or you could probably go to chrome.google.com, C-H-R-O-M-E.
Okay, I've actually got that downloaded on my computer right now.
And how does that work, performance-wise?
I've actually not tried it.
Okay, because I was going to say, if it appears to be, you know, there are basically three browsers out there. There's Internet, well, four that I know of that people use. And Larry's going to say, what's number four? He's already, I can tell, he's already like, what is number? Internet Explorer, Firefox, some people call it Mozilla, Chrome. And come on, Larry, you're an Apple user. Come on, you got to know this one. Safari. We're taking too long.
taking me a minute.
Yeah. So anyhow, I would download or I would check Chrome to see, you know, how it reacts on your system. And if it appears that it's browser specific, then maybe it's an issue with Firefox on your system. If it appears that it seems to, you know, be this delay across the board with all of your browsers, then it's a system-wide problem and something's running interference. So, you know, the fact that you said you had a professional, you know, work on your system, to me, you know, I've seen that, and, you know, it's my world and their world, totally different worlds. I would check and see if it's system, you know, if it's browser
specific. Yeah, if it takes 2.5 minutes for Chrome
and slows it down, then it's a system problem. It could be something as simple as your antivirus running interference. It could be
I've had multiple antivirus software, and it's always been that way.
Okay, so you have more than one running?
I've had more than one. Mm-hmm. Running throughout the years,
mm-hmm.
and seems to always be acting this way.
Right.
I didn't think it was normal that it'd be acting this way.
Right.
No, it's not.
Do you have a lot of things in your lower right system tray that are loaded?
No, I've had that cleaned out.
Okay.
Yep.
I tried Chrome and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it may be something where if you have the latest version of Firefox and let's say that's the one that's running slow and the other ones seem to be working fine, then you may want to give them some feedback and say, you know, your latest version is operating really slow on my system and it's never been that way and other browsers work fine. 'Cause these projects they're constantly going through revisions. So that's what I would do.
Good luck. Thank you for calling, Sean. Patricia in Middleton, we're on to you now. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. I'm calling to give some positive feedback and thanks to Peter. I think it was a month ago when you were on, you helped a caller that had some malware. It was a fake virus scam thing that infected his computer. I listened very carefully to that, and lo and behold, 2 days ago it happened to me. And fortunately, I still have my old computer that can go online, and I went to your site and to your tips page, number 43, and I wrote it down word for word, followed it step by step, and it worked like a charm.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. So you saved me a bunch of money.
Oh,
well, that's good to hear.
And I want
that
your listeners to know that if they do this, if they can get on a different computer, your information was just spot on. And
thank
I downloaded the two programs, including the one that the File Assassin program.
Yep.
And
I love the action of doing that.
Well, I guessed it on the first one. It gave me about 8 or 10 possibilities.
Yeah.
And it was an EXE file that had gotten into my applications data folder.
Yep.
And it, but it worked on any browser, so it didn't matter which browser I had on.
Right.
Yeah, the Chrome or the Firefox or whatever. It just, I couldn't use my mouse, I couldn't use my keyboard, so I just had to shut down manually. And then I fixed it all in safe mode, and 2 hours later, it was fixed.
And then and you shook your fist and said, yeah, take that.
Yeah, I was really upset. I think it got in, and I'm only speculating, but I'm pretty sure I did not. It got in through a Java platform, which I did not keep up to date. It was a plug-in on my Firefox. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep your plug-ins updated.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it got in.
But yeah, there are security breaches, and that's why they're constantly updating because, you know, they've been found out.
Yeah, but it just worked like a charm, and I thought, wow, I just had to let you know that, you know, maybe you should move it up to, like, number 2 or 3 on that page.
Instead of having to scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page?
Absolutely.
All right.
Patricia, thank you.
I will get to that. That sounds like a good priority. I know I spent hours on that because it was so frustrating to me, and I was like, you need to be gone. And you would look on the internet, and other people would be, you know, in the past they've had these tools and things that you could download and then run it, and nothing was working. And I was like, you need to be gone. You're really annoying me. And I came up with this combination of tools that are all free to find it and, you know, discover it and then figure out how to actually get rid of it, because these things camouflage themselves. They become stealth to the operating system. So the operating system can't even touch it.
No.
None of the programs that you're running on your system can touch it.
Well, then you can't go online.
And you can't go, you can't do anything. So one of the programs identifies the stealth file, tells you where it's located, what it's named, and then you go in with this other free tool, the file assassin. That's why I love the action of, you know, I'm taking it out.
Yeah, it's a fun button to click.
Well, thanks, that's great. Patricia.
That's great. I'm glad it worked for you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, good success story there. And that's on your tips page. Gary in Laval. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Recently, I got a new XP or HP computer with Windows 7.
Okay.
And when I try to go to Infostar.com, I get the your banner, and then I get an error message, a web page error.
Okay.
And it says that Internet Explorer has closed this web page to protect the computer. The Windows Data Execution Prevention detected an add-on trying to use system memory incorrectly. This can be caused by a malfunction or a malicious add-on. How do I get to your web page?
I think there might be a security setting in your browser that is set high, and there's probably, I run a Java applet that runs on the Infostar.com page, and it may be looking at that and saying that it's, you know, your security setting on your Internet are you using Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Yeah. Why don't you see if you can download Firefox or Chrome and see how they react. I know I've set up Windows 7 systems and gone to my web page, but I, you know, even as a default, so kind of a little surprised that that happens, but it might be that your security setting is a little different.
All right, I will look at that.
All right, good luck. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
For calling, Gary. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, you never know. You put up web pages and, you know, you never know how the world sees you. You can only take a look at. I remember my first experience with Internet Explorer 1.0, which is a plug-in to Microsoft Word, and talking with my Internet service provider. And, you know, this is all dial-in back in 94. And I said, you know, your web page looks different in Internet Explorer than it does in Netscape. And I download Cello and Mosaic. And I was like, the page looks different in all of them. And the funny thing, they came up with some standards. But even with all these standards, things are still a little different.
Billy in Wetoka, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I'm having trouble with audio on my computer, and I'm trying to figure out. This just started happening. Sometimes it's very quiet, and then sometimes there's like a crackling noise, like interrupting audio feed, and then sometimes the audio isn't there at all. And it's a Mac OS X. It's a G5. And I'm wondering if it's like if the audio card is faulty, if it sounds like a connection, or if it's something that would, be in the software or something.
So it's not, the crackling noise is coming out of the speakers?
Yeah, it'll crackle once or twice, you know what I mean, just a couple of times, and then it might, it sounds like the crackling almost fixes it sometimes. A crackle will come on, and then the volume will be back up and everything. And I've noticed that when I turn it off and stuff, it always, in the preferences, it goes back to the middle volume setting, and I have to turn it up higher, usually, and it doesn't stay in the higher mode.
Right. Now, the sound coming out of the speakers, are they external speakers, or is it internal to your...
It's the internal, it's the speaker in the computer.
Okay. I would try and see if you can hook up external speakers and see if the sound, is a problem with the external speakers.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea.
Because if it isn't a problem with the external speakers and it's telling you that the actual speaker itself has got an issue inside the computer.
Okay.
So... and I wouldn't be too concerned. I would just, you're going to be using external speakers. They might sound actually better, but you don't know until you try.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a problem where you put on external speakers and you're still having an issue, it might be something where there's something causing interference on your system with your audio.
Okay.
And I would probably... shutting down the system, I would reconnect, maybe reroute the wires so things are cleaner.
Okay.
And, plug things back in and see if there's something that was causing interference is gone. Or if it's still there, then I would probably look at, a software audio driver reinstall, to see if, That fixes it.
Okay, audio driver reinstall is what it would be called.
Yeah. Well, you're looking for the audio component multimedia on your Mac, and software is actually what's talking to the hardware to have you play sound.
Okay.
So, I would do the first two things.
Okay, go after the mechanical first.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the software last.
Okay.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yep, good luck. And the one other thing that I would do is I would always search online and try and ask the question of what the problem is.
Yeah.
And read the answers, whether or not they apply or if they're right spot on, then that's great. But always read the answers to see how you can ask the question better.
Mm-hmm.
Or... as much detail as you have. So what model computer you have, what version of the operating system you're using, and usually try to do it within probably 6 to 10 words. I wouldn't go more than 10 words.
Yeah.
And like I said, the better that you ask the question, the better answers you get.
And speaking of answers, you gave an answer about browsers. You were listing browsers, mm-hmm. and... James has emailed in to chide you for not adding Opera to the list of browsers because he says it's plenty fast.
Yeah, Opera's still out there too. Yeah.
All right.
And depending upon what computer you have, you could still operate Cello, which is was from Cornell.
Yeah.
Was a Unix browser. And you could probably still find and run. I have copies of Mosaic on disks, although, but the list could go a lot longer.
Right.
Valerie in Green Lake, your turn. Hi, Val.
Hi. I have a question about, like, antivirus and firewall software.
Okay.
I have friends who use free versions of that kind of software, and I've got, and I guess myself, I use one that I pay for.
Right.
And
I use
which
free.
Is better?
I use free.
And why should I feel comfortable with that?
Well, what are you paying for first? Which do you know which antivirus software you're paying for?
I have Norton.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And in the past, what I've seen is people not keeping something like Norton up to date or letting it lapse.
I don't. And, I pay for mine every year.
Okay. But you have to understand that the world of viruses, worms, Trojans, is that there's no 100% guarantee.
Well, true.
The people are out there doing, you know, writing, creating these stupid things that annoy all most of us. And occasionally they get through. When I've seen them get through on Norton and McAfee, they're really hard to get rid of. And the free versions that I've used for antivirus protection, things like Avast, AVG, now Microsoft has Microsoft Security Essentials. They're all using the same definitions for all the viruses and malware that's out there. They're all basically playing in the same game. And Norton and McAfee like to have a lot more control over your computer versus the other programs that I referred to, almost to the point where they get in the way of just trying to use your system peacefully. And because of that extra control, almost like a control freak mentality, I find them annoying to use and that they get in the way. And I also feel like it's a target for the antivirus worms, Trojans that are out there trying to seek out systems and infiltrate those, you know, to do damage. So, you know, the other programs that are out there seem to be less on the radar screen for being infiltrated. And they state that commercially you need to pay for me if you're using it in a business environment. However, if you're using it as a, you know, a home user, educational, it's free. And Microsoft was at some point in time charging for their, what they now call Microsoft Security Essentials, was charging for it. And I don't know where the light bulb went off or whatever, but, you know, they touted that they had the world's most secure operating system in the world when they came out with whichever version they've come out with. And now, you know, Windows 7. My point being that if it was so secure, then why are we being bothered by these things? And then they were charging for this service, just like Norton and McAfee, to ward off things that should have been warded off with their secure operating system. So now it's free. So
it's pretty good, too.
Yeah, it works well. I've had really good success with it. And so I guess that's my take on it. So
I don't know. I guess I think you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I don't know. I was trying to figure out is why do people, I mean, I guess, you know, why the company puts out something for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess whatever I saw, you know, was something on TV probably a year or two ago about some virus and some guy said you should pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I could never really find out the reason why, you mm-hmm. know, I guess.
Right.
But I guess I sometimes it concerns me, you know, like, well, if you don't pay for it
mm-hmm.
and then something goes wrong, we'll go, well, it was free. What can
right.
you say? You
right.
know?
Well, I use it on dozens of machines, and I've had one instance where stuff got through and it was actually not using Microsoft Security Essentials. And I had to use that TIP 43 to, you know, rescue that system. But I've had people using, like I said, Norton and McAfee, and had to wrestle with trying to undo it, because Norton was infiltrated and had problems, and then I had to try to uninstall it so then I could get the computer back to be able to, because I couldn't update Norton. I couldn't fix it to try and get rid of what was infecting the system.
So if it does get through, that's where the problem comes through, because then you can't get rid of it.
Typically, because it's a, I guess part of the angle is typically because it's a paid for product and service. Number one is when they show up on brand new computers and they say, you know, you have 3 months, Dell and all these other guys are all getting kickbacks. So when you're paying $30 a year, you know, they're probably getting $10, $15 of that pop. So I object to that. So that, you know, they're propagating millions of computers out there and people are clicking on Norton and McAfee, and then, you know, it's easy money for them. And these other products work just the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, I object to that, you know, that they're putting, they have easy street, you know, for saying, hey, you know, your system's protected for 3 months, and then if you want it, buy me.
Oh.
So, and I refuse to play in that game.
So you can keep it if you want, but. Yeah.
But there are options out there. Yeah. And there are options by the operating system manufacturer now for Microsoft. And Apple, you know, there's really no known issues that I know of yet. Yeah. And they keep talking about possibly at some point in time. But
so far, so good.
Yeah. So
I don't have to worry about all that stuff. Yeah. Thanks, Val. Don't know if we answered your question, but you got Peter's opinion on the whole matter. That's for sure. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, here to answer your computer and software questions. Let's go to John in La Crosse next.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Say, I've heard you address this before, but I wonder if you could give some tips on very slow startup.
Okay, slow startup.
Which operating system are you using?
I have XP.
Okay. On your system, do you have a lot of things in your right system tray?
I would say I'm not in front of it right now, but I would say maybe half a dozen.
Yeah. One thing you can do is, you know, identify who they belong to,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not you need them. You know, if you have an icon for connecting to the network, don't worry about it. Your audio, don't worry about it. Antivirus, you leave that alone. But
mm-hmm.
if you got things like AOL, Instant Messenger loading, mm-hmm. Skype, if you're not using Skype all the time, you know, things like that that start getting placed in your system tray, they take up resources and that are not needed until you actually need to use the program.
Okay.
So one of the things you can do is click on Start, then click on Run and type in MSConfig, which is short for MSConfig, and then hit Enter and then go to the Startup tab, and under that you'll see a bunch of checkboxes. And what you should do is write down the ones that are checked, and this takes a little bit of time, but if you uncheck the boxes that you can easily identify and know that you don't want them there, so Skype would be one that probably would be easy to identify, or maybe your camera program if you've got a Kodak or, you know, Canon or Nikon or whatever, and they're loading in your system tray. So if you can easily identify those, uncheck those, and then apply or save. And then when you reboot your system, it'll come up with a message that says, you know, you've done an operation. You know, do you want to see this again? I tell it I don't want to see the message again, but it always seems to come back, so I don't even bother. I don't even bother anymore. But when you after you reboot it the first time, it'll come up with that message. And then, you know, just click go on, you know, go on, proceed, and you go to your desktop and then see what your system tray looks like. and make sure that you still have the antivirus protection on your system and see how it works.
Okay.
That'll help speed things up. The other thing that you may want to do if you haven't done this before is if you go into the safe mode and run a system defrag on your computer. So what you need to do is, have you ever gone into safe mode in your system?
Yes, I've done defrag as well.
Okay. If you go into safe mode and do a disk cleanup.
Okay.
So that's under programs and accessories, then system tools, and then disk cleanup. And I don't know if you're using any of the other utilities out there like we've mentioned before, CCleaner.
No, that was a new one to me, yeah.
Okay. you can, download that and run that instead. And then they also have, I think, a defragler, which is another program that I've run that seems to work well. You could download that one as well. And instead of going in the safe mode, just download CCleaner and also defragler and run those. And also when you run CCleaner, run it to clean the registry. So not only to clean up your temporary files and internet files, but also when you you'll see an operation on the side in the program for cleaning the registry. What I usually do is back up that file once, know where it's backed up, if you want to copy it to a thumb drive, and then you may have to run it two or three more times to get it so your registry is completely clean, so it doesn't have these kind of loose ends.
Uh-huh.
And it helps the computer run faster. So I would run that, and that's within CCleaner. So after you do the cleanup of the temporary files and so forth, then run the clean the registry. And then after you reboot your system after that, then run the defragler program, which is for defragmenting. And then reboot your system, and
there you go.
Hopefully it'll work a lot better.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call, John. Arlene in New Berlin, we turn to you now. Hi, Arlene.
Thanks, Larry. Thank you, Peter. I have a couple of questions, and it probably has something to do with computers, but not what your other listeners have called in about.
Okay.
My husband's computer is set up with two of us on it. He has his side, and I have my side. My daughter went in and looked at it, and there's a lot of things she said I should not take off. The last time I did anything with business, had anything to do with business, was when we had standard typewriters. I am not computer literate.
Okay.
I need to know if I should take classes at WCTC or buy the book Computer for Dummies. I'm really lost. I am so lost it's not even funny.
Okay.
You have any friends that use computers?
Yeah. Yes, I have a daughter who taught herself on computer.
Uh-huh.
My grandson is very smart with computer. And then my one other granddaughter, her friend, TJ, is very knowledgeable on computers.
Do they live nearby?
Huh?
Do they live nearby?
Oh, yes, they do.
Uh-huh. Invite them over for a nice meal and sit down and line up your questions.
Oh,
okay.
You know, this is really terrible. I lost my husband, and that's why I don't know what to do. You know, it's like if I click this, the whole thing is going to go bingo.
Mm-hmm.
Although we had the computer in at iNet in Waukesha a couple of years ago to clean it up and give us more RAM.
Right.
If I do go back to them, can they start me off fresh on a new computer, and then I'd have my daughter come down and have me have stuff set up?
So are you talking about getting a new computer or having them
doing the one that I just taking in the tower that I have now,
right. Yeah.
Seeing what I don't need on there.
Uh-huh.
And then having her install stuff that because he did a lot of stuff on the computer that I won't need.
Okay, well, this is my point.
Okay.
Okay. One is, you feel like you don't know anything, but you've got that computer in front of you. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It's sitting there, and you need the courage to get on it. and do something with
well,
it.
Well, I have done stuff.
Okay.
I mean, I do a bang thing, but I mean, you know, there's other programs on there. I don't know
sure.
what to do with them.
Okay, so what you should do is have them each over for dinner independently.
Okay.
Line up your questions.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so do this piecemeal. Line up your, get your questions down.
Uh-huh.
All right. You want direction. What do I have?
Yes.
So your first guess, deal with like, you know, a few items. Don't take on too much and get on that computer and, you know, have a nice meal with them and visit and, you know, after dinner, you know, work on the computer maybe before and then have a few more questions answered and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Digest that. Then go on to the next one. Have the next guest over and see how much they know.
Yeah.
And then you kind of interviewing them.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So go through, you know, three or four. And then if you've got a friend, maybe five. And then you're going to start feeling more comfortable with what you have. You're going to get your questions somewhat answered, maybe completely,
mm-hmm.
maybe not entirely. But the point is you're going to proceed on. You're going to get more experience with what you have in front of you before you start making decisions about what I want and what I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, and then deciding, am I happy with how it's working or I'm not happy with it? Maybe you want a different computer or
mm-hmm.
maybe you want it completely redone. But my point is don't rush into it and find out the people that are your relatives and good friends and what they know and have them help you over time.
Mm-hmm.
So do this over the next, you know, 4 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
And then make decisions.
Knowing we have XP, and I can tell you this, that mm-hmm. I worked as a receptionist in an assisted living place, and I mm-hmm. learned Windows 7.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, when you do business, mm-hmm. that's all pre-programmed stuff. And I could go through the computer. I'm not afraid of doing
okay.
stuff. It's just that the stuff he has on the computer,
right.
I'm afraid
is not going to work, okay. uh-huh. or is something that's going to follow you up. Well, I think you should follow Peter's advice.
And you may find that some of the things you're going to need passwords, and you may not be able to get access to them.
Yeah.
And you could probably try and guess what his passwords were if it's certain programs that he was using.
Yeah.
Or you may just have to uninstall the programs. But I would take the approach of, you know, bring in your dinner guests, do the before dinner, and then after dinner follow up and make sure you're clear on how they answered things, and then move on
to the next one.
Move on to the next one so that you feel more comfortable, and then you're going to feel better about decisions you're going to make as related to either that computer or the next one.
Yep. Thank you, Arlene, for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. And John in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, John.
I have a quick one. I share my Wi-Fi with my neighbors. I mounted it out on my back porch, and it looks like there's maybe 20 or 25 neighbors that at some point during a week will use it.
Uh-huh. That's
I
nice
ask
of
them
you.
Not to do peer-to-peer, and my question is there a router that actually can block peer-to-peer so that I can share it with them without having to worry about any peer-to-peer problems?
All right. What you can do is you can put out what's called, it's made by Ingenious.
Uh-huh.
Engenius is the company. I even linked to it in the top 10 within the last couple of months. They make I forgot the exact model number. I think it's a 2610, and then there's a 7550. And you can call them up and I'm trying to remember the guy, the product manager. If you go on their website and look for their product manager, Roger, I think, is their project manager. You could you can email them with questions that you have. They run $80 for the 2610, and maybe $150 or so, maybe $125 for the 7550. But what those allow you to do is to extend your Wi-Fi, okay,
mm-hmm.
so that you're broadcasting it to other people, and you can password protect it so that it's security controlled, so that your signal is stronger, but you still have security on it.
Okay.
And that way, you know, the other people that are using it, they can... if you're doing it for people that you know.
No, these are people I don't know.
Yeah, but if you're doing it for people, you said you're doing it for your neighbor.
Right.
Okay. Well, you tell your neighbor what the access is to get into your extended Wi-Fi.
Sure. So I don't necessarily want it for people I know. I'm just broadcasting it for anybody.
Right.
But I want to limit any liability that I would have if they were downloading music or something. I don't want to get in trouble because they're doing that.
Well, then what you should do then is you really want to take your router and put in, you know, some security and tell your neighbor that's accessing it, that you know that's accessing it, you know, what that security is.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's pretty much the only way around it.
That's the only way to do that.
Okay, so there are no filters that recognize peer-to-peer and just block peer-to-peer and allow
other traffic
to pass through?
No.
Okay, great. See,
those Ingenious devices, they actually use them in airports and universities and businesses where if you have line of sight, you can point one to the other and actually extend Wi-Fi miles.
Peter Green of Info Star of Madison, our personal computer consultant. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest Peter Green of Info Star of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Peter, this time of the program, we always go through your list of top 10 finds. What have you got for us today?
Well, this first one has to do with Twitter. And you should just go there and go to infostar.com and click on the current top 10 or the archives and scroll to today's date. But I put up the information about that if you're a Twitter user, your tweets are going to be forever enshrined with the Library of Congress within a six, you know, they have like this 6 month period. But anyhow, there's a website called NOLOC.org, which will delete your tweets.
Oh, okay.
So, but you should go there and you'll find, either go to NOLOC.org or you can go to InfoStar. It's up there. The number two is called The Hill, THEHILL.com, and it's helping you keep up with politics in D.C. and a lot more. And they also have a Hillcon Valley for a technology blog. Number three is EduBlogs, EduBlogs.org, and it's an education blogging service. So teachers might want to take a look at that as related to conversing with their students. Number four is called Spoofy, SPOOFEE.com, and it's one of those coupon sites. Claims they have 2 million-plus visitors a month. Number five I heard recently in the news, it's called WikiLeaks.org, WikiLeaks.org. It's a multi-jurisdictional public service designed to protect whistleblowers, journalists, and activists who have sensitive material to communicate to the public. Number six is a Tool Critic. So just like it sounds, Tool Critic, and it's an organized resource for people that use tools. Number seven is posted by GE, and it's called ecomagination.com. So eco, E-C-O, and then imagination.com. And there's an Eco Imagination Challenge that is helping to provide power to the grid. It's a $200 million open innovation challenge. So the links are up there. Number eight is in beta, and it's an internet answer engine is what they call it. And it's called trueknowledge.com. And they claim to be the first artificial intelligence question answering search engine. So we'll see how that does. Number nine is for the International Society for Horticultural Science, and it's found at ishs.org, and it goes back to 1864, and it was formally organized in 1959 with more than 7,000 members representing 150 countries. Number 10 is a free photo editing web service, and if you don't have enough in the free, they have an upgrade, but it works on a Mac, Windows, and Linux. There's no download required, and it's called Picnic, P-I-C-N-I-K www.smartphonesk.com. And then I put a little link there to the fact that smartphones can now be jailbroken.
All right, there you have it. Go to infostar.com for more on those. Let's turn to Mike in Oshkosh. Mike, hello.
Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I guess it's good afternoon now. Anyway, two questions, if I might. Does your guest have any thoughts about using Skype versus Magic Jack? Does one use more bandwidth or more subject to dropping calls?
When you say Magic Jack, are you referring to the product that's advertised, you know, for creating?
I don't know, Magic.
Overseas and stuff at yeah. next to no cost.
Yeah. I've used Skype to communicate with my son who did a study abroad in Venezuela, and it worked great. And there was no cost to the, you know, both chatting. What's interesting is chatting by text or the video or the audio. I mean, it was all, you could do any of the above. And what was even interesting was you could set up, I have an iPhone, so I set up a Skype account on my iPhone. And I was, it was like my iPhone was an extension of my account, just another mechanical device, and all the information of my conversation with my iPhone and my PC, even if I did it simultaneous, was all within the account. It wasn't kept separate.
Okay.
So, and it didn't cost anything. So it was very easy to download. The testing of your equipment. If you don't have a video camera for your PC, but you have one for your laptop. You know, I bought like $6 video cams from overseas,
yeah.
you know, just, you know, to, and they work fine. So
yeah. The reason for asking that is my wife, we're in the Oshkosh area, and the wife has a sister that lives in Vancouver, mm-hmm. British Columbia.
Sure.
And she uses Skype uh-huh. and it frequently drops calls when mm-hmm. she's got the video part turned on. So I thought that uh-huh. might be using more bandwidth. Whereas Skype's or the Magic Jack seems to never ever drop calls, and I want to be a little knowledgeable about this if I'm sure. going to recommend one or the other to some of my friends.
Yeah. I think you have some dependency on the internet connection. So, you know, if you're using, you know, limited bandwidth, the video does use more bandwidth for, you know, for the conversation.
Right. They both got DSL
yeah.
service.
Uh-huh.
Can't tell you anything about the other one, unfortunately.
Yep, no experience with that.
Okay. And one other quick question. I've got a nasty virus on a friend's computer that I wiped out once, uh-huh. and a week later the darn thing came back.
Okay.
It snuck past AVG, and I've used StopZilla. StopZilla did identify it.
Uh-huh.
I paid the $9 or whatever to register it, and the StopZilla supposedly cleaned it out.
Uh-huh.
I went into the registry, checked that, and the darn thing's back again.
Yeah. If you go to my tips page, number 43, I think there's it's called Nuber, is one of the programs, one of the last programs.
Okay.
If you go through it, what it does is identifies the file and the location when it's running on your system. You'll see
I heard you mention Tip 43 earlier, and I thought that might be a program name, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah,
but it's actually your number on your website.
Right. If you go to the tips page and then number 43 on that page, it's the very last tip. And that'll tell you the name of the program that's running, and then if you use the malware bytes within that program, it's got a tool called File Assassin. You can go, you click on File Assassin, you put in the location of the file, and then it'll delete it.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yep.
Jake in Oshkosh, on to you now. Hi, Jake.
How you doing?
Good.
Hi.
For the caller who is wondering about how to block specifically peer-to-peer traffic,
uh-huh.
there are a wide range of devices which perform that functionality.
Okay.
And in fact, most even home-based routers and firewalls can block the static ports, which some peer-to-peer file sharing programs use.
Okay.
However, most peer-to-peer file sharing programs use ports which are dynamic in nature, So you need something like an application level firewall or a content filtering service. Cisco makes them, SonicWall makes them, WebSense, Barracuda. There are plenty of things that do it. There are also softwares which you can buy and install on a PC and use that as a content filtering device.
Right.
But, of course, you're moving out of the $100 range and more like into the $350 range.
Right, which probably most people don't want to do.
I know, but you told them that there wasn't anything that could do that.
No, I appreciate your follow-through on that.
All right.
Thanks.
That's great.
Thanks a lot for calling. We got an email from Bob who says, a friend with Mac equipment sends me forwards and emails and I don't get the attachments and or the photo or whatnot that was forwarded. I'm on a PC. Is the problem on his end or mine?
It sounds like there could be a number of things going on. One is it could be if he's forwarding the attachment that it's being blocked possibly by web service, internet service provider could be blocking it. Not likely. If it's attached and the file is not being recognized, could be a format for whatever reason that is native to the Mac but not being, you know, communicated to the PC, so you can't.
That happens to me once in a while, too.
Yeah. Just trying to think of what else. You know, if it's pictures, I would make sure that, you know, the Mac person is making sure that that file is, you know, readable for the PC and then, you know.
Yeah, I should be able to check that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it should say what the file extension is. Sometimes things aren't.
Not sure.
Yeah. I would see if, you know, if anything's blocking it. You know, if you're not getting the attachments and they're sending it, that's one thing. And then just making sure the file format is a readable PC format. Occasionally I see that.
And we have another email from Dave. I've scanned my old photos into files on my desktop computer. Originally, I could access those through Windows Picture and Fax Viewer. Somehow, possibly after an update, the pictures became converted into Adobe files, which only open with Adobe. Any easy way to get those so they open again with Windows Picture and Fax Viewer, I'm sorry.
Wonder why they got it sounds like the file association got changed when Adobe was installed. What you can do is go into Windows Explorer and under Tools, I believe the folder options and file types, you need to change the file association for the pictures on your system. So what I would do is probably do a Google search and look at changing file type associations for .jpgs, and you'll find probably a handful of pages, even Microsoft, to step you through where that is and how to change it. But what's happened is Adobe is taken over as the default to call up and look at the picture files versus the other programs.
Bob and Woodruff, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
I've got a PC that I use a wireless card on, and before that I used my cell phone as a modem. When I put the wireless card in Outlook Express, it will receive messages, but I can never, ever send a message through Outlook Express. The card works perfect in my laptop. It works perfect in my wife's Macintosh.
Okay.
Now, if I go into this PC under Gmail, with Google, I can send and receive fine. It seems like it's an isolated problem in the send aspect of the Outlook Express.
Yeah, it sounds to me like what's going on is all your connectivity issues are good. The only thing is the setup in your Outlook Express account for your outgoing has got a problem in it. And what you need to do is sometimes I've seen it where, for whatever reason, it's either missing information where it's completely blank, or it's missing information where it's incomplete, or there's something that's spelled incorrectly, or there's a space or an errant symbol in there. And occasionally, you know, that happens for whatever reason, and that's why it sounds like all your communication stuff is right, but that one spot in your outgoing email in your account setup is what you have to look at with a fine-tooth comb and see and make sure that it's correct.
And so what do I bring up on the computer to start at that?
You go on Outlook Express.
Yeah.
And I believe you click on Tools and then Accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you click on the account that you're having the problem with and go into Properties. And then you need to look at the settings for the servers. And you'll see the information there for ingoing and outgoing email.
All right.
And you need to change it, or you need to know what the setting needs to be for your internet service provider.
Okay.
So right. Sometimes it's like, for mine, it's like mail.infostar.com for both of them, but sometimes they want pop3.infostar.com and smtp.infostar.com. So they're all different, and sometimes they're even more different than that.
Okay. So, I'll give that a try then.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a printer problem, I think. I don't know for sure. I have a relatively inexpensive HP. It's about 3 years old, and it's one of these print, copy, scan.
Okay.
And very, very seldom would I ever want to scan anything. I do copy, obviously, and I print. But the other week I tried to scan, and I wanted to scan a document and have it come up as an Outlook, so I could edit it. I wanted to scan it and then edit it.
Okay.
So I hit scan on my printer, and I kept getting a message, USB not connected. So I checked the back of the printer and the plugs and all of the good stuff, you know what I mean? Still couldn't get it. Well, then I called HP, or I went online with HP and spent some time, and they got me a way to bypass that initial question on the USB, and I went to their help. And I could scan, all right? Now, I scan an Excel document, and I want to edit the numbers and stuff like that. But I can't. I find I can't do it. It comes back. It comes to me as an Adobe.
Right. An Adobe PDF file.
An Adobe PDF, yeah.
Right.
Number one, number two, number three.
Yeah.
Is it possible? First, is it possible to do that and edit it?
Well, The options for scanning typically are what kind of file formats, or what are you scanning and what are you planning to do. Sometimes you scan pictures, and then you want to crop the pictures, or you just want to have the picture in your system. And then sometimes they're Word documents or magazine articles or a couple of pages to a book, and you want to be able to have a document that you could edit. And then sometimes there are documents with numbers, like what you're saying, you know, for an Excel spreadsheet. Which is not typical, but you need to have software that allows you to be able to scan and then manipulate what you've scanned in. The technology, or the term OCR, optical character recognition, is to recognize the characters that are optically being scanned by your scanner, your all-in-one printer. So unless you have software and you can choose how you want to scan it and what you want it rendered to, you know, what you want that document to be like so you can edit and change it, right now it appears the default setting is the Adobe PDF.
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to go into that software and see what your options are, what your output options are.
Go into the Adobe?
No, go into your scanner software.
Well, that would be HP, wouldn't it?
It's an HP product, correct?
Yes.
Or something listed in that group of programs. So you need to see what somewhere in there is a default setting that you're scanning in and rendering stuff as a PDF file, and you want to make a choice. You want to be able to make it something different.
The file is there. I know.
Right.
I can scan it because I can call it back up. I can get it on the screen.
Right.
I can't do anything with it.
But you need to rescan it with software and make a different choice if you have that choice.
If I have that choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The software that ships with the scanner or the printer, the all-in-one, you need to look and see what options are and make the changes so that you can maybe scan it as a Word document and then cut and paste it into Excel, or see if there is an Excel option.
Yes, well, I just like to scan it as an Excel.
Yeah.
And
well, that's,
let it come out as an Excel.
Yeah, so you have to rescan it with the software.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right, good luck. Thank you for calling. And Jeff in Eau Claire, hello to you.
Hello to you, and right. Peter, happy Monday to you both, and
yeah,
happy August. I've got a question for Peter. I would like to know if there's an easy way to save a file in two separate locations at once on a PC.
Easy way to save a file, two separate... the only way that I know that would be possible, if you look for software out there that can override communicating with the operating system, the only way that I know that is done is with RAID controllers to talk to, different hard drives for mirroring, so that the copying is accomplished at the same time.
Real easy.
Yeah. So
don't know what that means.
Well, RAID is redundancy, redundant array. So what you might want to do is see if there is RAID software to allow you to, copy the file in two places at one time.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think. No, in the operating system, when you copy something, you can't. It doesn't sound like you can copy two locations at once.
I'm surprised nobody's thought of that before.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The RAID, the hardware software that's done by the operating system and is typical in server environments, is for backing up important data.
Okay, there you have it.
Yep.
Thank you very much for calling. And, Peter, thank you. You've been fun. We got through a lot of calls, and you're going to be back August 31st, the very last day of this month.
Oh, wow.
Okay. There we have it.
That'll come fast.
Yeah. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, and he'll be back August 31st, and we'll do this all over again with him. And take a look at his top 10 list and lots of other things. Go to infostar.com for that. Coming up tomorrow at 11, Tom Plager will be with us. He's dean and associate professor of anthropology and archaeology at UW-Baraboo in Sauk County. On to talk about archaeology. So we'll certainly look forward to that. And then we're going to do a little stargazing and take a look at what's going on in the night sky with Paul Kinzer, who's got a great book out on astronomy, and a regular guest on the show. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.